always trust you.
We ask the questions.
What is needed in the world?
Is that going to be?
Climate change. It's a term we've been hearing for decades, time and again. Initiatives, summits, and speeches have been held to ring the alarm. But recent reports have revealed just how much damage human activity has done to our planet and how late it's getting to turn things around. Planet Earth is now 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius hotter than it was just before the time cars replaced horses. Scientists say the damage is already irreversible and that a climate catastrophe is only a matter of time. World leaders are now trying to reduce the impact that carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases have on our planet and its ability to sustain life. Leaders of the G20 recently met in Rome. They acknowledged that tackling the climate emergency is urgent and critical, but they failed to commit to a 2050 deadline for achieving net zero emissions. They then met other world leaders in Glasgow in yet another UN climate summit, COP26. A clock counting down to environmental catastrophe was on display. But can we stop the clock on climate change? Talks and initiatives on the environment are usually driven by the world's superpowers. But Chile is now trying to have a louder voice. Energy Minister Juan Carlos Jobé is widely seen as the country's champion in the fight against climate change.
Some of you may be asking yourself, what does such a small country have to do with such an enormous problem? Let me put it this way. If climate change is Goliath, there is no better place on Earth to find David than Chile.
He plans to turn Chile into one of the world's biggest producers of so-called green hydrogen by 2030, with the global market's most competitive price. A world run on hydrogen and clean energy is not a new concept. In the 1800s, science fiction author Jules Verne predicted that water would one day become the source of the fuel of the future. And now technology has made it possible. But can Chile succeed where, for many, the world's largest economies appear to be failing? Chile's energy minister, Juan Carlos Jobé, talks to Al Jazeera.
Minister Juan Carlos Jobé, thank you so much for joining us at Talk to Al Jazeera. I'd like to start by asking you why you are so convinced, so sure, that green hydrogen is indeed the revolutionary energy source that the world needs right now.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation. It's great to be here. So I'm convinced that green hydrogen is not the solution for the whole problem we have with climate change, but it's what I call the missing link of the energy transition. In essence, because what the world is doing to reduce its carbon footprint, especially the energy sector, which is around 2/3 to 75% of emissions, is to use renewables in the power grid to generate cheap and clean electricity, and then use that electricity all over the economy, in transportation, in housing, in the industries. But that plan has one flaw, which is there are certain specific sectors of the economy that are very hard to electrify, are sectors in which the direct use of electricity will not work. For example, steel and cement production, heavy-duty trucking, or shipping industry. Mining trucks. In those segments, most people agree that instead of using electricity directly with batteries, we will be using green hydrogen and its derivatives, green ammonia or synthetic fuels. So, and that will be around 20% of the global energy demand. So it's going to be an essential piece of a bigger puzzle.
But if it is as good as it sounds, why isn't everybody using it already? Why hasn't it become widespread? Why have there been various attempts to try to get green hydrogen to replace fossil fuels and it hasn't worked?
Yes, it's true that the technology has been there for a long time. That is, the use of electricity through a process that is called electrolysis to split the water molecule into hydrogen and oxygen, right? That technology has been around for a long time. The thing is that the revolution in renewable energy has allowed the world to produce electricity from renewables at a very low cost just recently, right? So since electricity is around 50 to 80% of the cost of producing green hydrogen, and that cost has gone down significantly, it's now that we have the possibility of producing green hydrogen at a cost that makes it competitive with fossil fuels. We're still not there yet, but we're very close.
How quickly will or could the technology to allow green hydrogen to be competitive with fossil fuels take? Because as we all know, time is running out.
Yeah, we're running out of time, that's true. Most people agree that before the end of this decade, green hydrogen will be produced at a cost that can replace fossil fuels. 2025, 2026, it depends.
So
it's very soon. We are already producing green hydrogen in Chile for mining companies, for example. And I think that industry will develop very, very quickly.
Well, I'm going to get back to you very soon on this whole issue of cost, benefit and competition. But first, I'd like to delve into what you just touched on it briefly. Why Chile? I mean, Chile is saying that it is going to become the world leader in production and exportation of green hydrogen. Why such a small country like Chile with a medium-sized economy? Isn't that being overambitious?
I don't think so. So what we are saying is we're going to be able to produce the cheapest green hydrogen on the planet by 2030. That is one of the goals of our strategy, probably the most important one.
How?
Why do you think we can do that?
I don't know.
Because since electricity is the most important cost component of producing green hydrogen, since we have the best natural resources to produce renewable electricity, we will be able to produce the cheapest green hydrogen. Let me give you two numbers. Solar PV. In the Atacama Desert in the north, we have the best solar radiation on the planet. And that's not something that I say. Everybody agrees on that, right? So you can produce cheap electricity in Chile, in better conditions than anywhere else.
More than Saudi Arabia or Spain?
So capacity factors in Chile in the Atacama Desert are up to 37%. In Saudi Arabia, probably 30. So we have a big cost advantage. And in the south, in Magallanes, capacity factors for wind farms are over 70%. And that compares with 55% in the North Sea, right? So if we are able to harvest those resources to produce electricity and then green hydrogen, we will be producing the cheapest green hydrogen on the planet. And when I tell this story, some counterparts say, okay, Minister, but you run those numbers. The Japanese, I will be traveling to Japan soon, they said, okay, Minister, we're very interested. We will be importing green hydrogen, green ammonia, and syn fuels, but let us run our own numbers. And I said, okay, let's do that. And they hired the Institute for Energy Economics of Japan. They run their own numbers, and the conclusion is the same. The cheapest green ammonia, which is what they want to import, all of the world, not only production, but with shipping included, put in Japan, will come from Chile.
Even though Chile is sort of at the end of the world?
It depends on your point of view, but anyway.
Well, I mean, there is an advantage it's a very skinny country, so...
Yeah, we're very far away from most developed economies. But if you take into account the cost of production and the cost of shipping ammonia to Japan, Chile is still the most competitive place on Earth to produce green hydrogen.
Why do you mention ammonia and not green hydrogen?
Yeah, so let's get into the chemistry for a little bit. You split the molecule, you get the hydrogen and the oxygen. The hydrogen is still very expensive to move it around because you need to compress it, to cool it down. It's very expensive. But if you combine hydrogen with nitrogen, which is in the air, basically, you have green ammonia that can be used as a fuel. And ammonia is the most important feedstock to produce fertilizers, so it's key for food, and for explosives that are key for mining, right? The Japanese want to burn ammonia to produce electricity, right? And so we will be exporting ammonia first and eventually hydrogen, because ammonia, it's very easy to move around. The logistics of ammonia are already solved.
But doesn't it also emit a lot of methane gas?
No, it doesn't. No,
It's zero emissions?
Yeah, I mean...
Carbon neutral?
It depends on the ship you are using to ship it around, right? But the shipping industry is moving quickly to reduce its own emissions, and they will be probably using ammonia as a fuel themselves.
One of the key problems that some of the critics point out is that it is so expensive right now to make green hydrogen that it would be better that this renewable energy, wind and solar energy, would be better used for other purposes, like cars, for example, batteries.
Yeah, that's a good point. That could be valid in certain countries where they don't have the abundance of natural resources that we have to produce clean electricity. So let me give you another number. We have identified renewable capacity that is 80 times bigger than the size of the grid in Chile. So that means that we will never be able to take advantage of those resources if we want to use that electricity locally. So we need to find ways to export those resources to the world, and producing green hydrogen, ammonia, and so on is the best alternative to do that.
Well, Chile is curiously also the world's largest, right now is the world's largest producer of copper and exporter. But copper and mining in general are very, very dirty industries. But I understand that you have a plan to make green copper. Tell me a little bit about that.
That's the plan. So the first thing about minerals that is important, and maybe we can come back to this later, but without minerals, we will not be able to stop climate change. And I can come back to that later. But coming back to the carbon footprint of mining. So mining in Chile is the biggest user of energy. It consumes 30% of our electricity and a big chunk of our fuels, right? So they have two challenges in terms of emissions. First, to replace their power purchase agreements, so their contracts to supply electricity, moving out of coal into renewables. And they're moving very quickly. We are pushing the industry to have more than two-thirds of the supply of electricity to be renewable by 2025. We're moving very quickly. The other challenge is diesel. So mining trucks burn a lot of diesel. In Chile, they burn 2 million cubic meters of diesel per year. That's a lot of diesel. And to replace that diesel, the best alternative is green hydrogen. And most of the mining operations are located in places where we have very good solar irradiance. So we can produce the green hydrogen right there with the solar irradiance and then use that green hydrogen to replace the diesel in the trucks. That will allow us to make our mining more competitive when costs go down and also to reduce the carbon footprint, which is very important. I mean, I think international markets will be increasingly aware and sensitive to the carbon footprint of the products they will be consuming. So it's a great opportunity because the mining industry will take advantage of green hydrogen, but since it will become a very important source of local demand for green hydrogen, it will help us accelerate the development of the hydrogen industry.
The global financial markets are still driven and dependent on oil and gas. OPEC calls these sources of energy the engine of the world economy. Clearly, transitioning into a green economy, especially at a fast pace, requires a lot more than political will. And it certainly won't come at a cheap price. So, how can the financial aspects of an environmentally friendly market be covered?
Well, let me be the devil's advocate. A lot of people point out that, you know, this sounds great on paper and in theory, but the truth is that governments around the world, including the Chilean government, are not moving fast enough or energetically enough. For example, according to experts and former ministers and environmental ministers of Chile, the only way to really do this is to either increase substantially the price of pollution, of using diesel, for example, a tax, or heavy, heavy subsidies on the part of the state in order to make green hydrogen competitive and for electrolyzers and all these very expensive machines to actually get off the ground. But neither one is being done.
Both are being done. So first, on subsidies, we're going to award...
But I mean important subsidies.
Okay. So. It depends, right? So we will be awarding the first $50 million in subsidies for private companies to scale up production of green hydrogen in Chile, right? And we think that as technology evolves, subsidies will not be required. But we are giving away $50 million in a month or so, okay? And we are setting up a new facility, which is stage two, with the World Bank, to lend in very attractive terms, around $100 million for private projects on green hydrogen as well. And on carbon tax, we just set up a commission of economists that will propose a trajectory to increase the carbon tax, which we think is very important to make clean alternatives competitive with fossil fuels.
Because right now the Chilean government practically subsidizes the diesel for the mining industry and public transport. So, you know, it's okay to raise it a little, that might work, but don't you agree that it has to be, there has to be an incentive, a very, very strong incentive for the world to switch to green hydrogen when it's so much more comfortable to use fossil fuels?
Yes. So I fully agree that we need to increase the carbon tax, right? The price on carbon. By the way, I'm the co-chair of the Carbon Pricing Leadership Coalition that is pushing, not only in Chile but internationally, mm-hmm. an agenda to increase the price of carbon. I think that is very important. In Chile, we don't have subsidies for the use of diesel. What we do have is some exemptions to specific segments of the economy, including mining, which I think we need to replace, eliminate, to make clean alternatives like green hydrogen more competitive.
If this is going to happen as quickly as you say, it's going to take a lot more money than those $10 million or
50,
even the $100 million.
I said 50 and then 100. Okay.
I'm sorry to say it this way, but it seems like peanuts for such a big change.
It's interesting.
We're talking about billions, not millions.
Yeah, but some people say trillions. But the truth is that if you look at the renewable energy segment in Chile, it has developed very, very quickly without subsidies. Based, anchored in our natural resources, competitive business environment, and sound policy that sends the right signals for the long run. I think in green hydrogen, the biggest hurdle is technology. How do we scale up production of green hydrogen to reduce costs?
Well, that's going to take lots of money again. So who is going to pay for that? Chile alone can't do it, I think.
So I think it's going to be a combination, because most of the green hydrogen and its derivatives we will be producing will be consumed abroad. We will be exporting that. So off-takers at some point will start paying a price that compensates the cost of producing green hydrogen. Germany, for example, launched a couple of months ago an initiative that is called H2 Global. It's 900 million euros that will be invested precisely to bridge the gap between the cost of producing green hydrogen on the one side and the willingness to pay for hydrogen on the other side, right? So it's going to be a combination of natural resources from some countries, off-takers from other countries, subsidies and financial support from all countries in the world. It's going to be a combination. It's not going to happen overnight, but I'm convinced it's going to happen very quickly.
How did you get so interested in this? How did you become such a convert? You were, for example, a labor minister before, but now you are one of the biggest spokesmen or proponents of green hydrogen.
Yeah, it's true. So there's two parts to that question. So one is the climate change agenda. I started reading on climate change a couple of years ago more actively. And the more I read, the more convinced I am that it's the biggest challenge we have. I have three daughters, and I think of their future. And that is my main fuel, if we could use that word, for the climate change agenda. I think it's our biggest responsibility with future generations. So for me, climate change has a human face. It's not just the environment, it's future generations. And that for me is very important. On green hydrogen, I remember when I came here first time, 2.5 years ago.
To the ministry.
To the ministry, yeah. I came across this number, 80 times the capacity we will be ever be able to use locally. I mean the renewable energy capacity. And I was struggling, how are we going to be able to take advantage of that and share that with the world? And that's when I came across the green hydrogen agenda. And I realized it's the best way to move renewable energy around the world from countries that have an excess of renewable energy capacity like Chile to developed economies like Japan, Germany, and other countries that will be buying those resources.
What about the cost, going back again, of changing motors, the whole system of electricity that the world runs on in order to accommodate green hydrogen? Isn't that going to slow this down significantly? We need to, according to the to Chile's plans, and most governments say that that their commitment is to completely be carbon neutral by the year 2050. But would that mean scrapping airplanes, trains, cars, everything we know?
Yeah, but it's going to be a transition. That's why we talk about the energy transition, right? It's not going to be an immediate, reset. So think about cars, for example. So electric vehicles or green hydrogen vehicles, when they become competitive, are more expensive when you acquire them, but then the cost of using them per kilometer is much lower, right? So you make an initial investment that's higher, but then you more than recover that initial investment because you have savings along the life of those vehicles, right? So clean investments, at some point people thought, we were going to be making clean investments because it's good for the environment. We will hurt our returns because it's good for the environment, but that's not true any longer, right? So as technology evolves, the investments that will be required to change our economy will be profitable. So we will have a win-win for the environment and for the economy as well.
How much time is there to make this transition?
We don't have a lot of time. I think one of the important discussions that had accelerated in the last 6 months or a year is that we a couple of years ago, we were thinking about 2050. We were saying we need to be carbon neutral by 2050, which is what the Paris Agreement said, which is true. But increasingly, countries are looking into 2030. And we're saying if we're not able to reduce emissions by a half by 2030, it's going to be impossible to, be carbon neutral by 2050. So I think this decade is essential. This decade. Before 2030, we need to reduce our emissions by half.
What do you say to those leaders who don't even believe that climate change is caused by man and who are dragging their feet and they're continuing to use coal and all kinds of fossil fuels quite freely in the name of development?
Think about your kids, your grandchildren, and read about climate change. If you just take time to read 3 or 4 books, you will be convinced. If you have an open mind and you have an honest approach to it. I think the things we do or we don't do on this agenda is the bar by which future generations will judge us. So I agree, I understand that sometimes the political agenda or the economic agenda, gets in the way of the climate agenda. Mm-hmm. But I think if we are responsible with future generations, we need to push this agenda forward.
Minister Juan Carlos Jovet, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera. It's been a pleasure.
It's a pleasure.